It is crucial to work with a team of tax professionals for most individuals to determine how this new law might impact your individual taxes, as well as any future tax planning you might want to do, since so many changes have been made under this new law. So, you know, it's kind of funny. Each time a new tax law is passed, financial professionals, you know, like accountants, attorneys, financial advisors, are tasked with learning the new tax law and how it's going to impact their particular role in the planning process.
Hear how this firm used DPL's tools and technology to make the transition to independence. You're listening to Advisor Revelations.
Welcome to the Advisor Revelations podcast. I'm Amy Arnett, Vice President of Insurance Solutions at DPL Financial Partners. In this episode, we are discussing the One Big Beautiful Bill Act and tax implications for individuals, businesses, and estates. Joining us today is Karma McCallie. She is Vice President of Advanced Sales with TELUS Brokerage. Karma, thanks for taking some time and joining us today.
Yeah, my pleasure, Amy. Thank you so much for having me today.
I'm excited for our discussion. One important point I want to make before we start our discussion is that this content today is only intended for financial professional use. If anything that we talk about today interests you, be sure to contact a DPL consultant on our website at dplfp.com. Karma, to help our listeners better understand your firm and your experience, can you tell us a bit more about yourself and your role at TELUS?
Sure. So I have been an attorney for about 30 years, and I've spent that time both in private practice and also doing advanced sales and tax planning. So specifically, I've worked in advanced sales now for, going on 22 of those years, and 17 of those have been with the TELUS organization here. So my role essentially is to work with other agents and to make sure that the ideas that we're discussing are appropriate for the clients, troubleshoot. I do a lot of research, basically any way that I can help in these advanced tax matters that tend to come up in some of these cases. That's what I'm here as a resource for.
All right. Well, I can vouch that I have leaned on you in multiple instances, and you've been a world of knowledge and support for me. So I'm thrilled that we're having the opportunity today to dig a little bit deeper on some topics that definitely are important to our advisors. And thanks for that additional information. So now what we're going to talk about today on our podcast, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, or OBBBA. It's almost a tongue twister. It includes a broad set of tax changes for individuals, businesses, and estates. Karma, what are some of the key provisions under this new legislation that could impact taxpayers?
So, Amy, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act is a massive piece of legislation. It touches on so many areas of tax law and policy and planning. So I like to, when I'm discussing it through the lens of financial services or financial planning, I like to really break the most pertinent provisions down into two categories. And now bear with me here, Amy. Their names are really technical. It's the old stuff and the new stuff. So under the old stuff, the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, you'll probably remember many of the provisions that benefited individuals under the Tax Cut and Jobs Act that was passed back in 2017 were set to expire at the end of this year. So they were going to go away. The One Big Beautiful Bill Act made many of these provisions that were set to expire permanent. And those include the very large estate, gift, and generation skipping transfer tax exemptions that we've been working with for the past few years. Those are going to stick around. And in fact, next year, they're going to go up to $15 million per person. And that number will be indexed for inflation. So it will continue to go up as inflation rises. The highest federal income tax bracket is going to be 37% still. So you remember prior to the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, we had that kind of weird 39.6% number.
Right.
Fortunately, that was so hard to remember. We're not going back to that. It's going to remain at 37%. A lot of taxpayers anymore are not itemizing their deductions because of that higher standard deduction that we got as part of the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. And I think for a lot of taxpayers, it made doing their taxes a lot easier. That higher standard deduction is going to remain as well. One that kind of flew under the radar, Amy, was for a lot of individuals who own these pass-through businesses. We're talking S-Corps generally. There was a qualified business income deduction under the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. It's under Section 199A, and sometimes you'll hear it referred to as the 199A deduction. That basically gives a deduction for up to 20% of qualified business income for those business owners. And it's proven to be very popular. So that's been made permanent as well. And finally, another big one that has proven to be popular to our clients that do itemize is the Tax Cut and Jobs Act changed the AGI limit for cash donations to public charities. It used to be you could deduct up to 50% of your AGI, and the Tax Cut and Jobs Act changed that to 60%, and that was made permanent as well. So those are the old things that are still going to be sticking around, but there were quite a few new things that were included in the Tax Cut and Jobs Act as well. So the first two got a lot of press during the election last year. The first one is that for individuals who are working in industries where tips are customary, they're going to be able to deduct up to $25,000 of tip income for tax years 2025 through 2028, but that's going to be subject to income phase out. So they're going to need to check with their tax advisors, make sure that they meet their requirements. And it's not a permanent fix. It's not a permanent part of the tax law now. It will expire at the end of 2028. Similarly, overtime pay is going to, some individuals are going to receive a deduction for overtime pay as well. So there's a deduction for up to $25,000 for married taxpayers that file jointly, or $12,500 for single taxpayers. They can deduct that for tax year of overtime pay for tax years 2025 through 2028, just like with the tips. And again, that is going to be subject to those income phase out. So for those two, there conceivably could be individuals who are going to be eligible for potentially maybe both of those, but they're going to need to check with their tax advisors to figure that out. Taxpayers 65 or older got a nice deduction as part of the One Big Beautiful Bill. Each taxpayer is going to be able to deduct an additional, over the standard deduction, an additional $6,000 per taxpayer, but that's going to be subject to modified adjusted gross income limits. Also, you probably remember, because there was a lot of press and discussion around the SALT cap that was part of the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. Yeah, that was a big one. So what it used to be, there was a $10,000 cap that was part of the Tax Cut and Jobs Act for state and local taxes. Well, that proved to be very unpopular, especially in states where the tax rates are very high. So that number has been raised from $10,000 to $40,000 for 2025. That number is going to increase by 1% per year through 2029, and then the cap is going to return back down to $10,000 in 2030. So that one does have a sunset. It's going to go back to the prior tax law, and that one is also subject to income phase outs. So again, going to need to check with their tax advisor to see if they're eligible for it. Now, there were some charitable provisions that were included as well that were new, and they were very interesting, Amy, in that one of the things that we could almost count on when a big tax bill came out of Washington, if charitable planning was addressed at all, which sometimes it wasn't, but if it was, it was usually a positive change, because Washington has always sort of had the view that charities are integral to providing services in society that the government possibly can't or doesn't want to provide. So usually we would see tax provisions that would be considered to be positive. There were two in the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, though, that are perceived at least to have a negative impact on charitable giving. Now, time will tell. Everyone will be watching these. The first one is, under prior law, there it was an excise tax on nonprofits for compensation that they paid their executives over $1 million. So it only applied to the top five paid executives. So the top five over $1 million, there was an excise tax on their compensation. Under the One Big Beautiful Bill, that's been expanded to include all current employees. So what that means, Amy, is that, you know, for a lot of nonprofits, they're going to be looking, I think, for additional ways to compensate some of these executives who are used to getting these the higher compensation from the nonprofit. Charitable gifts also have a floor. So this is another change that is perceived to be negative towards charitable giving. There's this new floor as part of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act for individuals who make charitable gifts and do itemize and deduct those. Those gifts have to exceed 0.05% of their AGI to be deductible. Now, the at least line that we were given from Washington is that that was included to encourage larger charitable gifts. So clients want to deduct. So they're being encouraged to make larger gifts so that they can exceed that 0.05% floor. However, the charities are concerned that what that's going to do is for some of their smaller donors who they really rely on, they're not going to be willing to make those smaller gifts because they're not going to be able to deduct them. So we'll just have to see. We'll see how that one plays out. And finally, one provision that is perceived to be a positive provision under the One Big Beautiful Bill Act regarding charities is that for taxpayers who don't itemize, so these are our taxpayers that depend on that standard deduction. Previously, if they made a charitable gift, they really couldn't benefit from it because it wasn't deductible because they're not itemizing. Under the new law, they can deduct up to $1,000 if they're single or $2,000 if they're married filing joint, but that only applies to cash gifts. So any other type of gift to a charity, not going to qualify for that, but as long as it's a cash gift, relatively small amounts there. But let's face it, that's really who this is aimed towards. These are aimed towards people who are not itemizing. They maybe are making those smaller gifts to encourage them to still make them.
Okay. So in regards to that excise tax, that's for anybody that's receiving an income of $1 million or higher from that charity, right?
Anyone that's being compensated $1 million and over, and that's been an interesting kind of, as we were searching for new ways to compensate these or benefit, let's say, these executives, it's been interesting discussing what all is included in compensation,
right?
Because some of the things that you might would not expect would be included in that compensation limit. But yes, compensation over $1 million is going to be subject to an excise tax. And that's only for nonprofits. So when you think about it, it kind of puts them at a disadvantage because regular corporations, regular companies, they can still pay their executives over $1 million and not have to worry about that tax.
Okay. And then at the beginning, when you started talking about some of these provisions are going to be permanent. So does that mean that any legislation in the future won't be able to change those, or could there still be change in the future?
So there absolutely could still be change in the future. I like to say that there is no such thing as permanency in Washington.
Yeah.
So as we all know, generally, new administrations, when they come in, one of the first things they start talking about is cutting taxes or cutting the deficit. And those two are sometimes at odds with each other. So it's not at all unusual for new administrations when they come in to look at tax laws, especially those passed by the prior administration, to see what they want to tinker with. So I like to think of permanence in tax law, at least in Washington, as meaning until the next administration.
That's a much better clarification there when we talk about permanency, definitely.
Exactly.
Many of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act provisions are tied to a taxpayer's modified adjusted gross income. Can you explain what modified adjusted gross income is and why it's important to understand when considering the eligibility for new tax benefits?
So I can try, Amy. Modified adjusted gross income is one of the more amorphous things related to tax law. But generally speaking, your modified adjusted gross income is going to be your annual income, but there's going to be a number of adjustments and modifications that have been made to it. So it's essentially, if you think of your AGI, I think we're all more familiar with the concept of adjusted gross income. It's your AGI, but some of those above the line deductions are going to be added back in for your modified adjusted gross income. Now, if you didn't have above the line deductions, it would probably be your adjusted gross income, but certain deductions are added back in. So it's important, though, because the IRS and several other government agencies use that modified adjusted gross income to determine whether you're eligible for certain tax credits and deductions like we've been talking about. Also, your modified adjusted gross income can help determine whether or even how you can participate in certain types of retirement accounts and even government programs. So it's an important number. Here's the kicker, though. Here's why I say I can try to explain it. The formula for modified adjusted gross income varies depending on the situation and what it is that you're trying to take or qualify for. So you'd really just have to work with your tax advisor to figure out, depending on what your question is, how your modified adjusted gross income would factor into that situation. But it is important for our discussion today because, like you said, several of the new benefits are impacted by either your modified adjusted gross income or maybe just your adjusted gross income, like that 60% cash gift limit on AGI to charities for the deduction, or that new senior deduction for senior taxpayers is going to be impacted by modified adjusted gross income. So knowing which one applies of those two and how to calculate it correctly, I think will determine how much of a benefit the taxpayer might be eligible for. So, you know, again, anyone who is interested in knowing that information, they're going to need to get together with their tax advisors to figure it out.
Yeah. Very important to make sure the CPAs are up on what's going on. I have to give my CPA a test just to make sure he's doing everything that is in the best interest of my adjusted gross income or modified adjusted gross income. So in light of the new tax landscape created by the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, how critical is it to consult with a financial advisor or tax professional to integrate strategic planning and the use of investment solutions?
Yeah, so Amy, that is a great question. As a tax professional, I can tell you it is crucial to work with a team of tax professionals for most individuals to determine how this new law might impact your individual taxes, as well as any future tax planning you might want to do, since so many changes have been made under this new law. So, you know, it's kind of funny. Each time a new tax law is passed, financial professionals, you know, like accountants, attorneys, financial advisors are tasked with learning the new tax law and how it's going to impact their particular role in the planning process. You know, I look at it through a tax law lens. So that's not necessarily telling you which investments are going to work best under the new tax law. So that's why I say it's really important to make sure that you have a team of professionals that you're working with, all of whom are familiar with how the law works in their particular role. I think that making sure that the team that you're working with can understand the law and all of its nuances helps them to relate that knowledge to make sure that your plan results in getting all of the advantages under the current law, making sure that you understand the disadvantages, because there are some, there always are with any tax law, and also making sure that you don't run afoul of it in some way, because that's the last thing that we want to do for any of our clients. Just making sure that everything works correctly, that you know what you're getting, what type of planning you're doing, and how the advantages and disadvantages work together.
Definitely. A team approach is always the best avenue to take in my mind, because there's always going to be some strengths with each team member that can fill the hole for other team members that might not have that knowledge or expertise. So definitely important to work together as a team. So how do you feel that this One Big Beautiful Bill Act will impact insurance planning?
So it's kind of interesting. There's a lot of talking points inside of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. And don't get me wrong, there's a lot of changes, you know, a lot of different things, even obviously way beyond the scope of our discussion today. There's tons of changes in there. But really, from a life insurance perspective, there's not a whole lot that's been changed. Fortunately, there weren't any changes to the way that insurance is taxed that were included in the act. So life insurance now is taxed exactly the way that it has been for years and years and years. It still plays a key role in many different areas of planning. And that it goes across the spectrum from estate planning, business planning. We've talked a little bit about executive benefit planning, charitable planning. All of those are impacted in some way or another by life insurance. And really, the role of life insurance has not changed. We're still encouraging our clients who can to take advantage of that large gift exemption that they're benefiting from currently and will continue to going forward, at least for the next few years. And possibly leverage those gifts with life insurance where appropriate, you know, if we figure that is the best way to meet the client's goals. Life insurance, for example, is a tool in Dynasty Trust funding, can make sense for a client who wants to make those large gifts, wants to benefit multiple generations, and wants to make sure that there's always that liquidity there for each of the successive generations. So there's a lot of interesting different planning ideas that we use life insurance for. Interestingly enough, out of this act, though, there's been some interesting planning around the use of grantor and non-grantor trusts that we've not been seeing for a while, but it's kind of come back up. And those oftentimes involve life insurance for funding. Now, the choice of which trust to use totally depends on the goods. That's a huge discussion, and it depends on the goals of the individual, what they're trying to accomplish, what their current tax situation is. But we are seeing very customized planning options in this area. And also, Amy, don't forget, you know, when we're discussing planning opportunities, valuation discounts are still very appropriate for a lot of people. We use valuation discounts as a way to take an asset and get discounts in terms of that value for a gift or maybe selling to family members or selling to a trust for family members. So those valuation discounts, even though Washington has looked at them many times in the past and has considered doing away with them, so far, they're still very viable for planning. And with income tax brackets remaining lower, and now that they are at least scheduled to be, as we talked about, permanent, we're seeing a lot of folks who are considering accessing their large tax qualified accounts, like, for example, IRAs, going ahead and paying the taxes on the distributions they're taking at a lower bracket, and then using those proceeds for life insurance to get that tax treatment of life insurance for the benefit of their family members or their beneficiaries. So essentially what we've done there is we've taken an asset that's not going to get that step up in basis at death, and it's going to be subject to income tax, and we've turned it into an asset in life insurance that should be income tax free if positioned correctly. So a lot of interesting planning ideas and discussions there. So these are just a few of the ideas around life insurance that we're seeing considered under the new tax act. Bottom line, most of the ones that we were talking about before are still very viable, and we're now coming up with some new ideas under the act. So I think that the important point here, Amy, is to realize that planning is still really important. I'm hearing a lot of folks out there saying, oh gosh, with the exemptions so large, I don't really need to do planning. Mm-hmm. There's planning beyond tax law and tax planning that needs to be considered as well. But tax planning is still very important. And the new tax law has created some opportunities that we can take advantage of.
Yeah. And like I asked you just a little bit ago, you know, is it really permanent? And I know that we've had discussions earlier in the year about the sunsetting of the federal estate tax. So there was a lot of scurrying around that, oh, I better get some coverage in place now. And then with the extension of that, and, you know, it probably took a weight off a lot of individuals' shoulders. But who's to say what's going to happen 10, 15, even 20 years from now? And there's definitely opportunity to still include that insurance planning now while someone is young and healthy. You know, maybe it's funded a little bit differently, but definitely still some opportunity. And we need to have discussions with clients that are in those situations to make sure that we're acting on the best potential outcome for them as we can project out safely. Thank you, Karma, so much for participating today. We really appreciate your time. Do you have any closing thoughts or comments that you'd like to add to our conversation?
Yeah. So kind of piggybacking off of your comments about the permanency and, you know, how can tax law change? Obviously, none of us know what's going to happen in the future, but that is certainly not a reason not to do the planning today. One of the things that you're hearing discussed out there a lot is either flexible planning or adaptable planning are the buzzwords that we're hearing. And really what that means is there's all kinds of creative ways that we've come up with to keep planning flexible so that no matter what changes do come in the future, you'll be able to adapt to it. Your plan will be able to adapt to it to keep that plan organic and perfectly situated to meet your goals. Building in those automatic pivot points, no matter what does happen in the future, I think not only gives you the peace of mind now to go ahead and enter into the planning, but the knowledge that that plan is still going to work for you 10, 20, 30 years down the road. And life insurance can be an incredibly flexible tool inside of these plans, primarily because it's easy to repurpose life insurance. When you think of clients who buy a life insurance policy, for example, for income purposes, to income replacement, if they were to pass away young, and then they get to retirement, they've got plenty of assets, but they look at this policy and, hey, it's got cash value in it. Maybe I can use this as a supplemental retirement plan if I need it. Later on, they see that they don't need it and they think, well, I could use it for legacy purposes. So life insurance is a really flexible, adaptable tool that we use inside of the planning. And we're using it inside of planning that's already been put together primarily with the focus of staying adaptable. So just keeping those options available if we need them in the future, I think we're going to see a lot more discussion around that as we go forward.
Yeah, agreed. And all the more reason to have that team in place, right? You've got a team of individuals that are help supporting and making that plan. So dead on. So I want to thank everyone for being with us today. Again, you know, let's connect at dplfp.com and subscribe for more episodes anywhere you listen to podcasts.
Thank you so much for having me on today, Amy.
Absolutely loved it.
Thanks for listening. To hear more advisor revelations, go to dplfp.com and subscribe on your favorite podcast streaming app.